Hey guys, it's Tom here. Just wanted to let you know that we have a Patreon you can get on for $3 a month and you get bonus episodes every week. And if you sign up for the whole year, you get a 10% discount. That's $2.70 a month, I believe. And we also have a tier where you can be a guest on the Patreon show. You could pick a band yourself to defend and do it on the Patreon. So get on over there. It's patreon.com/standbyyourband. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I'm Tom Takara, the Wolf of Dog Street, once again joined, as always, by the Prince of Snarkness himself, Tommy McNamara. How are you, Tommy?
I'm doing very well, Tom. We're about a third of the way through sober February, not counting the Super Bowl, which is going great so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's the best month to pick because it's the shortest, and it's a day shorter when you just choose a day that doesn't count.
Valentine's Day's on the table. We're still in talks.
Yeah, I mean, if I were your girl, I'd be pissed. I remember it was so funny that Emily got mad that you picked Sober Mondays, and then she was like, yeah, and then I have to find out about Sober Mondays. What a surprise. We have a hot little show today, and I want to go ahead and introduce our guests right off the bat, because we got to introduce this whole concept that we're doing. We're changing the format up for the day, and I am excited for it. Today, we've got Chris Gethard on the show. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. Thank you. I also like that you picked Mondays because probably the most traditional day to not drink anyway, right?
Yes. Right. Shouldn't have had to clarify. But yeah, the pandemic has been hard on all of us. So.
Yeah. Usually Monday is recovery day for a lot of people.
Right. Right. It's like you're
especially
already hungover.
Football season.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. That was the tough thing. Man, it's so hard to pick days, especially during quarantine stuff where you're like, well, I was going to do Monday this week. I was going to go, I'm not going to have anything. And then my girlfriend wanted to watch The Bachelor. And it's like, well, if I'm going to watch The Bachelor, I'm obviously not going to do that totally perked up, you know? I did a bunch of Percocets, so.
There you go.
I want to introduce that we're doing something. This is very interesting that you picked the band you did, Chris, because our friend who we'll hear from soon, Jared Thompson, the owner of the Comedy Attic, called me a couple weeks ago saying, you know what you guys should be doing is every once in a while you need to do a band that people just don't appreciate enough, that maybe got fallen by the wayside, or so to say, or that people just don't know much about, as opposed to something that people just completely hate, like Nickelback or Creed or something. And so I think that you picked the best band we could do that with, because it's a band that Jared I know loves, and a band that I've been wanting to get into for a while, because a friend of the show, Shane Torres, is obsessed with them. He's gone out to see them. I think Kanane likes them too. And I had never fully gotten into them, but we're going to talk about Jawbreaker today.
Yeah, I love Jawbreaker. And I also want to say, too, I don't assume anyone knows anything about me, but I've been very vocal. And even in my most high, like in my HBO special, I quote Smith's lyrics a number of times. And originally when we talked, the idea was, hey, I'll do the Smiths. That's a good band to defend. A lot of people have things to say. But unfortunately, since then, Morrissey has just said a series of borderline alt-right, if not outright alt-right things. And I'm thinking about getting my tattoo removed of his signature. So it was just
to get a bigger one.
What's that?
To get an even bigger tattoo from him.
It's on my shoulder here. And there was a part, like if I wasn't like a married father at this point, I would have put like 80s era above Morrissey, or like remember when Morrissey wasn't insane. And I would have done like a bit, but now I'm like, I got a son, and gotta probably just cover it with something about him. Like, that's the one thing I have to imagine. I'll always stand by my son, no matter what he says. So
it'd be a good time to change your son's name to Morrison, and then you can just easily.
There you go. Yeah, I named you out of convenience for me, and that's actually an issue. So. But yeah, I feel like sadly, since we first talked, like, it's actually crossed the threshold where I can't defend Morrissey. And sure. For as much as I still love the Smiths and the other three members and those songs, I'm like, I just can't spend a podcast episode defending him.
That's totally fair. And when the Smiths got brought up, I was really excited because I like a lot of their music too. But it was kind of more interesting to get into a new band or to learn about a band that I didn't know a lot about. And it's kind of great timing because they reunited a few years ago. So it led me to watching the documentary about them called Don't Break Down. And I don't know, have you seen it?
It's awesome.
It's so good. I just finished it a few hours ago. And it's one of those things, I'm like in that post band documentary glow where I'm like, I was just texting Shane Torres about them. And I was like, dude, the next time they're anywhere near here after the pandemic, I can't wait to go because their shows seem so fun.
I went to their first show back at Riot Fest in Chicago, and it was awesome. And I think history has proven, you know, they reunited, and I think people go, oh, they are great. But, you know, from the documentary, maybe in 2021, I don't need to defend this, but, you know, there's a whole, in the punk world, this whole idea of punk purism was a huge thing. You can't sell out. Mainstream stuff is garbage. If you're a band from the punk scene and you sign to a major label, you go on MTV, that means now you're garbage, no matter what your music sounds like. And I think that a lot of people would agree that no band ever took it on the chin harder from the punk purists than Jawbreaker.
Yeah.
And you look back and go, man, that was nonsense. That was not right. And so in that sense, I think there is some defending to do, even though currently I think there's a ton of love for them.
Well, even so, let's get right into all this because this is exactly what I wanted to talk about, is the whole idea of selling out, which I feel like is mostly, we've talked about on the show a little bit, but it's like, it's mostly over. It feels like people don't seem to get nearly as upset with a band for making money now.
And there's so many, I actually find it very hard to even discern what independent music exactly means, because you will have artists who are hugely successful, who you find out their label is a subsidiary of Warner Brothers, and people give them credit for being independent. And then you also have like 16-year-old rappers who put stuff up on Bandcamp and become just as successful. Mm-hmm. And all the streaming services allow you to find things in new ways. So I almost kind of feel like, you know, I'm 40, so I'm getting, you know, I'm officially middle-aged. And when you saw back in the day that a band was on Warner Brothers or Geffen, you immediately, your mind go, I'm judging this in a different way than if it's a band on, you know, Lookout Records or Matador Records. They mean different things ethically.
Yeah.
Now I don't know that that's the case. I don't think anybody has the time or wherewithal to care about that.
Yeah.
Which I think is a nice change, actually.
I think it's good for sure. There's a moment that goes along with the selling out thing in that doc that shocked me, because I'll be totally honest, I don't know a ton about punk history, so I was really surprised to know that people viewed them just touring with Nirvana as this thing where they weren't welcome at their home club anymore.
It's, if people, you guys can see, because we're looking at each other, I'm actually grabbing my head in frustration and not to put on a show. Because again, 2021, I think even punk people go, man, Nirvana was an amazing band. And do a lot of people say that they're the ones where the dam broke and punk got ruined a little bit? Sure. But now that we are kind of over ourselves, you look at Nirvana, you go, oh my God, what great songs and what a great sound. But it's the perfect example of punks really hated on Nirvana for being on MTV in particular, and kind of exposing the punk ethic. And they felt like, even though Nirvana had been a punk band through and through, they felt like, oh, you know, the ethics of this now negates the fact that they sound very similar to what they used to sound like, mm-hmm. if not the same. And it's the ultimate example of like, man, and now in 2021, everybody who likes that style of music is going, holy shit, man, Nirvana's awesome to this day. And Jawbreaker got crushed. I mean, to the point where legendarily their fans would show up to their shows, and when they played songs from the old albums, they would watch. And when they played songs from their from Dear You, their mm-hmm. major label album, the fans would physically turn their backs to Jawbreaker and not watch, because they said Jawbreaker turned their backs on us, so we'll turn our backs on them. And they would sometimes sit down, face away from them, and sit down to make sure the band really could perceive what was happening. And it's just cruel. It's cruel and it's mean.
It just, I think, and this is totally me watching it, knowing a lot of these people now, and I don't feel like this could be totally inaccurate, but I was watching them and getting pissed off because I was like, this could be totally wrong, but I was like, I'm sure you little rich fucks parents are paying for you to like have a nice little life, or you have money, and these guys needed to make, they were broke. I mean, they were fucking broke before they sold that, before they made that deal. It seemed like based on having to worry about canceling their Europe tour and stuff. And I'm basing a lot of this off that doc. So
I did grow up in the punk scene and know a lot about it. And actually I've become friends with the drummer of Jawbreaker through very circuitous means.
He owned a venue in San Francisco, right?
He owned a video store.
Yeah.
And he used to do comedy, but he was also in another San Francisco band called J Church, which I was a huge fan of. And mm-hmm. J Church is a much less talked about band. And I wrote an article for a place called The Talk House about J Church. And he actually reached out to me and was like, thank you for doing that. Like, nobody talks about J Church. That's cool. And we've maintained a little friendship since then. And you know, a casual, like, I'm not going to pretend that me and Adam from Jawbreaker are like the tightest people, but we'll text and a couple times a year catch up. And
he was on Sandwich Night at the same time as me, if I remember.
Oh, hell yeah.
He was on Sandwich Night. The holiday that I invented and that somehow still happens 10 years in. But yeah, you know, I also think there's two things to keep in mind. One, they came out of a venue called Gilman Street. It's mm-hmm. the same venue that broke Green Day. It's where the Rancid guys started out. And everybody was going, Jawbreaker is amazing. They're going to sell out too. They said publicly over and over again, we have no interest. We're never going major labels. So I think they made a mistake there.
Yeah.
But then I also think that by the time they signed with the major label, the band was kind of running its course. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're at a point where they were going, why not see what happens? And why not make a little money off of this thing before it ends? And why not see if this generates some excitement to keep it going? Because I don't know how long it's going to keep going anyway. So maybe this will be a thing that allows it to survive. So I think, I'm sure some of it was excitement about the money. I also think there's something to be said for it. We all know, like, and I've been in this situation. Like, when I was on public access TV, everybody was, I actually never identified with Jawbreaker more because my show was on public access. It was this like super hip underground thing. After a while, bands on nationwide tours would try to be in the tri-state area on a Wednesday to play our show, our dumb public access show where we couldn't even pay them. And then we got picked up by cable and it was really, really exciting. And there was this initial burst of the fans being like, oh, you did it. And then instantly people going, the cable version sucks. It lost all its heart. And now I'll tell you, everyone's favorite episode of that show is this thing we did with the dumpster. That's the one that people are like, it's one of the best episodes of TV from that decade. And our show was, a lot of episodes were garbage. And that was, you know, we were experimenting. That was the deal. That was one of the cable episodes. Everybody's favorite thing is one of the cable episodes. Nobody cares now. But I experienced that same thing of like, but it's also like, you guys have been in comedy long enough to know I've been doing it 20 years. I didn't get a pilot on that show until I was 14 years in. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't pay your mortgage with indie credibility.
Yeah.
My son's not going to have food in his mouth because I'm doing a cool underground thing. At a certain point, artists have to be allowed to pursue their art at a high level. And thank God that's changed a bit. But even in the mid 2000s, like, I had people who had loved my shit for years go, fuck this, you're a sellout. And I fought so hard to do it the right way as much as possible. And I still felt the same thing. I remember thinking and laughing. I wasn't even planning on saying that before I got here, but I remember thinking, kind of giggling to myself of like, oh, this is the mini version of getting jawbreakered.
Well, it's funny that you say that thing about people looking back on this episode from the cable version as being great and the moment saying it was not as good, because the same thing happens in the doc, exactly with Dear You, where people immediately like, this isn't the same sound, this sucks. And if you listen to it, you can tell the vocals are very
clear.
Yeah, they're very clear. Sure. And all those people are like, yeah, I listened to that one the most now. That's the best one.
I was going to say, like, going back again, probably not the riskiest thing to defend Jawbreaker now that they have had this, reunion re-embracing, but I would go so far as to say, I mean, most people will say 24 Hour Revenge Therapy is their best album, and it is awesome and like a punk classic, but I am one of those people who I listen to Dear You more. Like, if you ask me, my favorite Jawbreaker song is Bad Scene, Everyone's Fault. Like, I think Chemistry is awesome, Oyster is awesome, all those songs. I mean, I think the one that Julian Baker covered, I can't believe I'm blanking on the name.
Yeah, I just, Shane just texted me that. Shane Torres just texted me that video of Julian Baker's cover.
Beautiful.
Of Accident Prone.
Accident Prone, the one about having the room at the hospital.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I got to you and there was nothing left. It's like, that album's awesome, maybe their best one. And that is the thing that I think a lot of the punks still get grumpy and don't want to admit, that it's definitely the second best one, and it's closer than a lot of people will admit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I listened to both those albums today and yesterday, and I really liked both. I do want to talk really fast before we, because I want to play some songs, and I want to get to Jared's voicemail, but really fast, you mentioned the thing about them saying in live during live shows they would never sign with a major label. And then this could have been exaggerated, but they said literally a week later they signed, because he went on this big thing and he was in Chicago. Blake was like, there's no way we're signing with a major label. That's a rumor. We would never do that. And there's a great line from Billy Joe Armstrong, who's in the audience, and they had just, Green Day had signed, and he was the only one in the room who was with a major label, and he was like, man, this is the loneliest I've ever felt, and please don't say what you're saying. You're fucking up so bad.
But you also got to keep in mind that legendarily, Blake and their bassist, Chris, got in a physical altercation on stage at one point.
Like, oh, on stage?
That's the rumor. I might be wrong about that, but the story I heard, and maybe it has been dispelled as a myth, but when I was a teenager who came up loving Jawbreaker, that was the gossip. Oh, they started fighting on stage, which, you know, if we want to fact check it, we can, but like, they were getting in physical altercations as a band. Like, they needed change. They needed to take some big swings. They needed to try to save the goddamn thing. So.
That was, I don't know if you've ever been to one of our Stand By Your Band live shows, yeah. Chris, but there was a lot of fist fighting.
Yeah. I mean, that's on the ticket.
Listen, I mean, this is an audio medium, but we're on Zoom and I can see that you're both covered in contusions right now. And I can only assume
it's kind of the only way we can record. I mean, you don't bottle up magic like this without any bruises.
I've heard that generally, as you guys, when you do your recordings of this show, generally one of you is immediately in an Uber on the way to the other.
That's the hard part is we can't record together anymore because of COVID. So we do wear a mask to fight really fast.
Yeah, you do. You fight responsibly, at least until the vaccines get. When Johnson & Johnson steps up, then maybe you fight without the masks again. But
also, we will never sign to a major podcast.
No, no. Wait, we already did. all right. I did find, I just wanted to play because I had this audio saved up anyway. I thought it was funny. It was it's Blake and Chris getting into a fight in their van. But I mean, there might be multiple stories, but this one just seemed really intense. I'm going to pull this right here. This is from the doc.
You know, it's been war all the time.
In like what sense? Any stories?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I don't know. We would like fight like crazy. And then we had some pretty brutal tours.
Yeah.
So I guess you want me to tell the story of the end of the band in front of the cemetery?
It just worked out that way. I wasn't trying to make that happen.
Well, in my defense, I would say I was really drunk. And I know that's a poor defense.
It was the Foo Fighters tour, 96, spring of 96. It started off pretty good. And then, I don't know, something went wrong.
Blake was being kind of a jerk. Remember, he was never a big fan of Chris's driving. And Chris was driving the van.
And then Blake spit gum in my hair.
And I was kind of like, oh, no.
I was like, you know what? I've had it. I'm sick and tired of being, you know, a servant to your prima donna, you know, ego.
I'm told that I screamed, "You've been ruining my life since I met you." And I don't remember that, but I do remember the sentiment.
And I threw the car into park, and I went for it.
Just pulled over and just kind of like jumped at Blake.
You know, went full on, just like, you know, like with choke hands.
We tumbled out of the van to go fight, to like have it out. Anthony was like pulling Blake and Chris like back into the van.
And they were both kind of swinging wildly and like, you know, hitting me instead.
I just love the line, "You've been ruining my life since the day I met you." That is one of the most dramatic things I've ever heard. And that'll break up a band for sure.
Also, I should have remembered it wasn't on stage since I've watched the documentary where they talk about it being in the van. My bad.
Oh, no, all good. I was like, I mean, it's also possible they were getting in fights on stage too. Who knows? But that one, they kind of just go, all right, maybe this is done. And Chris goes on to say, like, they weren't really hanging out at that point. They kind of weren't friends. And to your point, that's what they signed for in the first place. They were like, we're kind of running out of gas here. And there's a moment where they say, we're either signing to a major label or we're quitting. There's just nothing here anymore.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah. And I love it. I love the underground stuff. I came up a punk guy, but now that I became an artist, like, I don't ever want to be one of these people. Like, there's been enough TV shows and dialogue about, like, oh, it's hard to be a comedian. And I am of the opinion of, like, you got to scrap a lot to get gigs, but let's not pretend that we're like in a steel foundry. It's
right.
Not a hard thing to do. But for anybody who's trying to be an artist, like, I've been freaking out lately because I've always been very like full of self-doubt, but I can recognize that I've had a successful career.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can see that. And I'm about to lose my health insurance this year.
Yeah.
At the age of 40 with a son. And that's just part of being an artist.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, there wasn't any Screen Actors Guild work because of the pandemic, and they're not extending it. I think they're not doing the right thing. So I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I'll have to figure out how to not have health insurance when I have a mortgage and a kid. Like,
yeah,
that's part of being an artist, you know? So yeah, sometimes you got to take the money and see if it helps instead of hurts.
True. And it's just, yeah, I mean, there are just no guarantees, and you get tired. And then, like, especially guys in bands like that, where much of it is just touring, and you kind of just have to get along with your guys all the time. And especially when you're not hanging out after, and it just feels like work. Yeah, you're going to wear each other out a little bit. And that seems brutal. And yeah, Chris is like, yeah, I just didn't want to live like this anymore, which yeah, I kind of get.
I get it.
We should take a quick break before we get into the music, and I want to hear what Jared has to say about this band. So we'll be right back with more Stand By Your Band. All right, we're back with some more Stand By Your Band. I think we should hear some music before we listen to Jared, but I know Jared has a lot of thoughts on this band. So let's go through this playlist right off the bat. We have a song from 24, Our Revenge Therapy. This is a Boxcar. So let's start
this
it off.
This is their classic.
Boxcar. Yes.
Four, two, three, four, five.
That is a little bit of Boxcar. And yeah, that's a great song.
It's the best. And you can tell their relationship with the scene, so to speak, because that was one of their independent albums. And the first line is, "You're not punk. I'm telling everyone, save your breath. I never won what was one." Like, there was always maybe some contentiousness there. That's their most popular song.
What's the score? Yeah.
Yeah.
That song's about the Honda Element, right?
It is. Yeah, that was actually sponsored. Yeah, that was a sponsored song. Yeah.
Maybe they did sell out, actually.
I have one more clip from the doc I want to play before we hear Jared, because it's related to the recording of that album. And it's with Steve Albini. It just really made me laugh how little he gave a fuck about them.
I remember this clip.
It really tickled me, because they're just like, they're so excited to work with him. He works with the Pixies and stuff, and then he's just so doesn't give a fuck about them, doesn't remember them, and it's really funny to me. Oh, I gotta find it here. Okay, here we go.
I'm swinging.
This is it. 34. One second. Oh, here we go.
And we decided to do it with Steve Albini. And, you know, we had admired his work, and we, you know, Big Black and Surfer Rosa, the Pixies record that he did. I called him up and I was kind of starstruck. I was kind of freaked out, actually, to talk to him. It was like, he's the guy, you know?
I had a studio in my house. Essentially, I would just answer the phone, and whoever was on the other end of the phone would book time in the studio.
And we kind of had that inferiority complex of like, we're this little punk band and you're this monster kind of electronic crushing super genius.
I'm fairly certain that I had mistook them for the band Jawbox.
I know that I had this
amp and this cabinet at the time of the Jawbreaker session.
I was talking to Albini about guitar sounds, you know, I'm like, this is like a big chorus, man. You know what I mean? I mean, it's gotta have like this big descending melody.
As I recall, we're talking about Jawbreaker and not Jawbox, right?
Okay.
As I recall, Jawbreaker had Marshalls.
So I wanted him to like break out the big guns, you know, and he busted out this little like Radio Shack amp. He was like, what if we do it like this?
I'm sorry, I don't know any Jawbreaker songs.
I just love, they're like, they couldn't be have more reverence for him. They're like, they're so hyped to work with him. And he's like, yeah, is it, wait, Jawbox?
It almost stings more because he doesn't remember them today.
I know.
It's regarded as a classic album, and he hasn't even gone back. Like, that's, it's current day. He's like, I don't know.
That's exactly what's so funny about it, because he's not like, yeah, at the time I was like, are these guys Jawbox or Jawbreaker? He's like, yeah, I still don't know. I don't give a fuck.
It never takes that turn where he's like, and then they got in there, man, my mind was blown. Never takes that turn. He's like, yeah, no, they booked time at my studio.
Yeah, if you called, I would answer, and you could book some time. Oh, that's beautiful. All right, we have a regular segment to get to, which is that our friend and foe of the show, Jared Thompson, the owner of the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana, where you can still see shows online. They do Zoom shows that you can watch from the safety of your home. But he's our resident snob. He hates almost every band we play on this show, and so I think he's going to be really excited about this one, because if I remember correctly, this is one of his go-to bands. So let's hear from our friend Jared Thompson.
What's up, y'all? It's this week's It Went to Jared. The boys are going to have Chris Gethard on discussing my favorite band of all time, Jawbreaker. So just real quick, Chris, I feel like I haven't seen or talked to you in years, which is true, I think. But it was so great to see you in Class Action Park. Like, I had never heard of this place, and I saw the trailer, and I was like, oh, my God, we have to watch this. Well, it was such a pleasant surprise to have you on there, and I thought you were really funny and great in it, and all I can say is I wish I would have been able to go at least once. But so anyway, on as far as Jawbreaker goes, so I think that sort of found them, you know, after Green Day or whatever. They just with like a lot of people. They just spoke to me in a way that really no other band in that time frame was. And the fact that the music was sort of more normal than a lot of the stuff, you know, like I came up on like Born Against and, you know, bands like Econochrist and like just bands that were like, you know, your parents would be like, what the fuck are you listening to? Like, this is so bad. So Jawbreaker was one of the first bands that I ever listened to where it was like pleasant enough sounding that like I could listen to it and people didn't like look at me like I had three heads. And, you know, so I just, and they're one of the bands that I have stuck with all these years. And I, you know, I listen to them as often as I listen to anything. One of the things that I really think is crazy about them is that even though they are sort of worshipped by a lot of people and, you know, there's so many tattoos and shit that people have, I still feel like that for like a national sort of thing, they are still very underappreciated. And I always wonder in the case of this, or we talked about Elliot Smith a few weeks ago, will they ever get their sort of like mainstream due? Like, will they ever go into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? It's a really weird and great question. But anyway, I'm really excited to hear Chris's stories about the band. And anyway, I'll see you guys later. Thanks.
All right. That was Jared's thoughts on Jawbreaker. And I love that he posited a question and then said, it's a really great question. Will they make it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And that's a great question. And it is. What do you think, Chris?
I cannot imagine a world in which Jawbreaker is inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah. Sadly enough. Sadly enough. There's, you know, I'm not a fan of punk purism, but there's just clearly a line that some bands are never going to cross and never be respected in a certain way. And I think what's so fascinating and heartbreaking about Jared's question is they are probably the band that's right on that line, maybe mm-hmm. more than any other punk band. Like Green Day went over the line. Nirvana went over the line. And there's hundreds and hundreds of bands that never even came close to the line. And Jawbreaker's kind of heartbreakingly the ones that got there. And then you think, if all those shitheads who read too much Maximum Rock and Roll and who took punk to mean like 95 different things that weren't artist supportive, and maybe back then weren't realizing that, but it was so aggressive. If those shitheads hadn't kind of danced on the grave as the band was dying, like before they were dead, they were hastening, like kicking them down into the grave while they were still alive. That hadn't happened. Like, would they be over that line now? Would they have put out a couple more major label albums and had a song that like broke way bigger and be there? Like, it's punk purism at its worst. You may have cost this band a legacy that would be in a museum. Because I'll also say this, tangent, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I always thought it was going to be super cheesy. And then I was spending time in Cleveland and went, and it's fucking cool.
I had a good time there.
If they just called it the Rock and Roll Museum,
yeah,
it's because they call it a Hall of Fame that you think it's going to be like a, you know, like a Planet Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Rockets vibe in there. But if they just called it a museum, because that's what it is.
It's yeah.
Like super fun, super cool, but I also think, I wonder if Jared would agree. And thank you for the kind words, Jared. But I also feel like, in my opinion, and I hope nobody gets mad at me, and I'm not trying to judge their choices, but I feel like the video, the song they chose to try to get onto MTV was Fireman, which I'm a little bit baffled by. Because I think there's four or five better songs on Dear You. And mm-hmm. They went for it. And the video looks cool. And, you know, they're good looking guys. Like, they had everything. They had every chance. But I feel like they also could have picked a couple songs that just were maybe a little catchier, more traditional.
Yeah.
Maybe that would have been the smart play. Who knows?
I could see it happening. Blake is a very handsome guy. They're handsome guys for sure. I mean, Chris is like a bit of a weirdo, but he's cool though. I thought he was really cool and I liked him in the documentary a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, like, they were also, you got to keep in mind, really worshipped. I mean, there's quotes, I forget who said it, but and this one speaks right to my heart, of somebody said Blake Schwarzenbach has the most the fans who treat him like a religious icon, he has that more than anyone on earth except Morrissey, which yeah. tells you a lot. Like, he's really, his lyrics are like really, really poetic and heartfelt, and he also is so versatile. Like, some of his songs are sort of like traditional, just get the lyrics out. And then some are telling stories of characters, and they're very literary. And he went on to be a college professor. And like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in Brooklyn. In Brooklyn. I think at Hunter College, maybe. He was like, which always made me laugh, because I'm like, if I randomly went to Hunter College and I was a punk kid, and then all of a sudden you're like, there's definitely not two Blake Schwartz in Boston. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, that happened to some young punk kid at some point.
That is wild.
And yeah, I mean, I think if you listen to, no matter what their battles were, Chris's bass playing is like really innovative and weird.
Yeah.
And I would actually go so far to say, and I'm not somebody who sits around and analyzes music like this. I'm really not. But when you listen to Adam's drumming, I think there's a lot of choices he makes that are just more complex than you'd ever expect in a punk song, to the point where I notice it. Mm-hmm. And some of it, it's the weirdest thing to say. I actually think some of his choices as a drummer are like funny, but in a way that it almost feels like an intentional joke placed within the song via the drums, which is just kind of like strange to even notice.
That's interesting.
To hear a drummer do a thing and you're like, oh shit, like, that's hilarious.
I mean, they say in the doc that they're not self-serious and that they're very silly for the most part, but, and I believe that, but I gotta tell you, this thing made me fall in love with Adam. I became, and oh, also Shane was telling me that he spotted Adam in the, or no, Adam spotted him in the crowd because he wore a Jawbreaker shirt on Colbert. And a friend of the show, Jane Harrison, sent the Colbert clip over to Adam. And so he was like, yeah, come to a show sometime. And then Adam like pointed him out in the crowd and like talked to him for a while. And like, it's just, that's such a cool move. And he just seems like, in the doc, he seems like such a cool guy. And I was watching it knowing that, even knowing that they were going to do what they did, which is reunite in 2017. And I was just so sad. It was breaking my heart watching how his eyes just looked so sad when thinking about what happened. Cause he was the one, he was like this middleman and wanted to keep going. And it's tough.
And he kept it alive. He was the one who managed to get the rights to their masters back so he could reissue them and stuff. And
right.
He's also, I have to say, an insanely supportive guy of other artists. Like when he and I were getting to know each other, he did in his video store, he used to put on comedy shows, and he reached out to me and was like, he would be like, hey, this San Francisco comic I love is moving to New York. Like, if you find him, say hi or look out for them.
Oh, man, that's so sick.
Yeah. And good people too. Like one person who I already knew a little bit, but like Claire O'Kane, who I think is so awesome and so cool. He went out of his way to be like, yo, Claire's the best. Like you got to link up with Claire, and Claire and I are friends. And that's not a thing that like people need to do, let alone people who aren't in the comedy scene and who are legendary in their own scene. Like that's really giving.
Yeah.
That's really giving and thoughtful.
This comic, Torio Van Grohl sent me, and we'll get to the rest of the comments later, but he sent me that he was the first one to tell me about Adam owning that video store that was, he says, the coolest comedy venue in San Francisco up until it closed. And he said that he showed up at my last Sketchfest show just to give me a piece of the old backdrop I used to make fun of during sets. That's cool as shit. That's just such a cool move. And there's a lot of people who would be like, hey, fuck you. Don't make fun of my venue. And instead he was like, I'm going to give you this because it's so cool. I love that.
Well, listen to this. So that Banjay Church I mentioned, the guy who is the lead singer, he died. And I wrote this thing about, they had this 7-inch that the B-side was secretly a Beck song, so it's impossible to find. Like, it goes on eBay for thousands of dollars because Beck fans want it so bad, and there's only 100 of them in the world. So I wrote about this 7-inch and how it's this like sort of quietly mythical thing. And he Facebook messages me. He's like, hey, dude, like, we don't know each other. What's your number? I want to talk. And I was like, is this a fucking drummer? He's got a distinctive name, you know? So he calls me up. He's like, thanks for writing that, this and that, and blah, blah, blah. And like, we're talking on the phone and he's really personal. He goes, hey, what's your address? So I give him my address. And like a week later, this package shows up and it's got J Church t-shirts, stickers. Wow. It's got a cassette of all these rare demos they had. He sent along Jawbreaker shirts. He sent along vinyl copies of their albums. And in one of them, it was either Dear You or ETC. It has like a fold out, like gatefold thing. And he personally went through with a Sharpie and annotated it. and was like, oh, this picture was taken by this person. I forget who it was, but it was like another artist from their scene. It was like, oh, like nobody actually knows this, but this picture was taken by this other person, you know, who's more famous than we are. Like, oh, this lyric refers to this show that we did in this town and nobody knows that. I was like, he personally went, and this is fucking awesome.
That's
like,
so
and
sick.
I didn't ask him to do any of that.
That is cool That's as amazing. Shit, man.
We talked on the phone one time and he did the nicest person.
That is so cool, man. I love stories like that. And just it's one of those things where you could just see how he was interacting with his employees in the documentary. You're like, this guy is cool. There's no way that he's not cool the way that they talk to him and about him. We should go ahead and blast through some of this music. And I want to hear, because we've been talking about Dear You, I think we should go ahead and hear Bad Scene, Everyone's Fault. And jump to it here.
Probably my favorite Jawbreaker song is.
Too mean or you're too nice.
He can drop a bomb. He can rip your heart out of your chest with these lyrics. And I always love that one. That's a perfect example of why Dear You is really incredible and I think elevates their game, because like Bivouac in particular, you can't understand any of the lyrics and the lyrics are beautiful.
Yes.
And it's a shame. You have to kind of memorize them off the lyric sheets to really get going. And the other thing I love about that song is I am a sucker for anything that ends unexpectedly on a punchline, like the book Portnoy's Complaint by Philip Roth, I love, because it ends on a punchline where you're like, oh my God, like this is a whole novel that just ended on one punchline. And that song is all about two guys who go to a party. It's one of these story songs. Two guys go to a party, they run into one of the guy's ex-girlfriends, and it's just the story of this incident. And then the last line is just, and then the cop showed up and it abruptly stops. And I'm like, that's a good punchline.
That's
about
great.
Going to a punk rock party.
You made a great point about, and I've talked about this on the show enough to where I get made fun of about it, but I love lyrics so much. And that's a big problem that I've had with punk, because so many punk songs that have great lyrics, I don't know what the fuck they're saying, so it's tough for me. That's why I liked listening to this album, because they're throughout that documentary they're talking about what a genius Blake is with lyrics and that he's this beautiful poet, and then I feel like they do a decent job of shining his lyrics better than a lot of punk stuff does, but he is great. Reading his lyrics, I was deeply moved. One of the songs on here like made me fully emotional. And that
which one?
The Kiss the Bottle really tough. I mean, it's just great. Yeah. Shit, should we just listen to it? We kind of have to rush through these a little bit, so I'm just going to play them through. So this is Kiss the Bottle. That one's great. The line "I was kissing the bottle when I should have been kissing you" is great.
I could feel you trying to let the clip run long.
I know. That's what I was trying to get to. I fucked up. I started it too early.
I could feel you thinking, why did I play the Hollywood show? I could feel you thinking it.
That's
a common thing that happens.
Yeah, it's tough because it's
40 seconds of intro, and then it's like, oh, no.
After saying, man, these lyrics ripped my heart out. And then fucked up. Most people are going, is this an instrumental?
Immediately, I was like, God damn it. Because then I was like, I couldn't remember exactly where it picked up, but hey, that'll leave the people wanting more. Get on there. But I mean, that also made me laugh, the line where he says the hardened beans in the pan, we're hungry.
Yeah, they're funny guys, and but people say they're pretentious, and I'm like, they are, but in a beautiful way. We're like, they know it.
And also, let me say, they're smart. It's fine.
One of the like smart in a way too. That song's a perfect example of, I think you can hear it, and especially considering the era, like a lot of punk back then was sort of like juvenile lyrics trying to be funny, and it's great. It's what I grew up on. I love it, and the music is pretty basic. Mm-hmm. Then you had indie rock, which could delve into like, you know, like sort of like jazz drumming and elaborate like Spanish style guitar solos, and a lot of that is great. And they are the band that I think is most in the middle of, like, it's solidly punk in the way that like gets your gears going,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like music for 14-year-olds, unless those 14-year-olds are like cool 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
And as someone prone to immense bouts of sadness, that song is one of the ones where you realize why this band means so much to me. Cause if I'm in a certain place in my head and you hear a song that starts with the lyric, it gets loneliest at
yes.
night down by the liquor store.
Yep.
Like, you got me.
Yeah, I'm immediately sucked in. That's
I'm
the
good.
It's beautiful. All right, let's hear Chesterfield King. Hell yeah. Okay. I'm just going to play the next two so we can talk about them all at once. So
I say one quick thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's the one I've been most in touch with lately. And just on a cheesy note, it's one of the songs that, because when you have a kid, you just wind up singing every song you know to try to get them to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, that song just calms him down and makes him feel all right asleep. So it's become like super meaningful for me in a whole new way. Anyway,
that's beautiful.
I'm an emo fuck, so sorry.
Emo dad coming to NBC Fridays.
Emo dad. Maybe that'll be my next album title. You may have just named my next album.
All right, let's hear Indictment, another one off of 24. Indictment. That one's great.
It I don't know how much you want to just fly. I feel like I'm being very annoying.
No, you're not annoying. Are you kidding? No.
That song has this line, so crazy it might just work. Then we'll quit our jobs. We could be the next group that you rob. And I have to tell you, that song. And I'm just gonna be emo dad again. Or just emo. I came up at UCB when it was like UCB, when it was the thing everybody heard about, and when it's still before, I think, a lot of the
backlash,
a lot of backlash. I was there when it was unquestionable. People were like, that place is launching people and mm-hmm. it's helping a lot of people. And I had, you know, I started there in 2000 and when I was seeing like my best friend got hired, you know, Bobby Moynihan, mm-hmm. SNL, Zach Woods, The Office, like I taught Aubrey Plaza level 3 class, and it was immensely stressful for me. And then I'm sitting there feeling like I've always been this weirdo and I cannot fucking figure out why I can kill on stage. And then I cannot get anybody to, so the line's so crazy, it might just work. Then we'll quit our jobs. I'm not lying when I say that was a song that came to mean a lot to me in that stretch of life. Cause it always made me remember, like, remember who I am, remember how I grew up, remember that my ideas, like, and then the idea we could be the next group that you rob. Like, I'm not a huge person in any way, but I've had a couple things where people go, oh, that's fucking nuts what you did on Public Access. And then 6 months later, I see it on a better show, like in a cleaned up, better version. And I'm not bitter. I actually am very flattered sometimes that I saw shit. And I once had a producer at a very popular show warn me and say, a lot of writers' rooms, people are watching your show. And I was like, oh, that's flattering. He goes, no. Think about what I'm saying. They're watching your show. And I was like, oh, he's warning me. So the idea of being the crazy one and actually just saying like, no, it's going to fucking work. I'm like, oh, that song, that's one of those songs that actually helped.
I love that. No, thank you for saying that. Now, every time I hear that, I'm going to think of that. That's beautiful.
I feel like everyone listening to your show right now is like, this is the least funny, most self-important and annoying episode of all time.
No, this is great. I've had a great time on this episode. And the last I saved my favorite song on this playlist for last. Really like it. It's called Want, and it's on Unfun.
It's fucking awesome. An early one.
If you couldn't tell, I fucked up again because that's what I was trying to get to. I really thought it came earlier than that.
That's one of the cool things about their lyrics being hard to understand is that in that early stuff, you'd be like, wait, what is he saying? And then all of a sudden it's I want you. And that's so clear. And you're just like, oh.
It's great. Awesome. You gave it to us.
And that was one of their earliest songs. Like that's a pretty advanced song to write for one of your first songs as like a college punk band.
I love that song. That one, so even though it wasn't with the Albini, that one gave me Pixies feels, and I was into it. It gave me all the Pixies feels.
When my wife and I were getting to know each other, she put together a playlist of songs for me. She's very, very, she's a musician, and she's got impeccable taste, and that song was on the mix, and I was like, oh, we're going to... get along in this one.
That is beautiful. We have one last segment here to get to before we wrap up and give our review of the playlist here, and that is to read the from the peanut gallery here. So let's go straight to it. If you're on the Patreon, you get your stuff read guaranteed, so we'll go there first and see what we got here. And by the way, Patreon's only $3 a damn month. Get in there, people. All right. Allie McElwee says, Kiss the Bottle is a bop. True. JV says, I was lucky enough to see one of their reunion shows at Brooklyn Steel. I didn't think they could ever put on a show that lived up to the hype around a Jawbreaker reunion, but goddamn did they ever. So good that I didn't even care. Hell yeah. Andrew Jaworski says, one of my favorite bands of all time. I found out about them in 2002 because the Ataris covered Boxcar. I discovered them through the Ataris cover of Boxcar back in 02. I purchased 24-Hour Revenge Therapy and illegally downloaded all the other records and, until I was able to... Oh, he wrote even more. I see here. Where did this end? 24 was just gritty enough to expand my horizons and get me to check out other bands I might have skipped over previously, but just poppy enough that my 18-year-old brain wouldn't be scared. A few years later, I'd get my hands on their other records. Bivouac and Unfun both served as gateways to indie rock and post-hardcore, while Dear You blew my mind, especially because at that point, bands had started ripping that album off aggressively. Really great band, and I was stoked to finally see them play live not once, but twice the last few years. Nice. Tim Claridge says, sweet... Wait, oh, wait, that's a private message. Never mind.
sweet what?
Sweet, I will pay the ransom that you have held my family up for. Cole Froling says, I like this idea. I don't listen to the podcast because I love hearing 30 seconds of six kind of bad songs. Ron Trimbath writes, Jawbreaker was the band I always pretended to know about when I went to punk shows in my hometown in the late 90s because it wasn't cool to say that Green Day was your favorite punk band. And also, love your work, Chris. Hey, there you go.
Hey, that's nice.
Chris me or Chris him?
Wait, is your name Chris too? That's why I'm so fucking confused. Let's see here. Then we have, do we have anything on the Twitter?
Yeah. I'll do Mike Leibovitz said, Jawbreaker is awesome, and so is the first Jess to Brazil album. I love Mike. Mm-hmm. Austin, Typro Negative, wrote 24-Hour Revenge Therapy is a banger front to back. I've gotten the chance to see them live twice in the past few years, and they still sound great. Michael Keefe said, love them. And George Gordon apparently worked with Blake at Double Windsor and said he was great, and he was a tremendous guest on a podcast called Know Your Roles, so I have to listen to that.
Yeah, check that out for sure. I definitely will. We got a bunch of Facebook comments, but we don't have time to get to a lot of them. Get on the Patreon if you want them guaranteed read, people. Shane Torres says, oh, I got thoughts, motherfucker. Yeah, sorry, guys. I'll give you one. Okay. Gary's Jagowski says, love them. I highly suggest listening to Forgetters as well. They were playing in Milwaukee, and I asked Blake if I could get a picture with him, and he said he doesn't do pictures anymore. And then I found his Instagram, and it was nothing but selfies, which made me laugh because he's like 50. Before doing the podcast, you should check Blake's video game reviews from like 97 between Jawbreaker and JTB. Oh, that's interesting. Maybe I will do that. All right. Last thing here is that we rate the playlist and out of six. But before we do that, Chris, you get to give your final thoughts on the band Jawbreaker.
I just think they're really good. I think there is a lot of, you know, I think they put up with a lot of unfair stuff. I'm glad I'm not the only person who's going to see them now when they come around and kind of ignoring all that. And on top of that, I know one of them personally, and he's a super nice guy, and they deserve every kind thing that comes their way.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Tommy, do you want to take the lead here, or do you want me to?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to try not to hold it against them that Adam did insult my recording setup during
he
Sandwich
did.
Night.
I do remember that. And I remember you looking actually sort of taken aback and hurt.
I was like, this guy from a legendary band, he was the first one to make fun of it, too. Now a lot of people have been making fun of it, and he started the trend, so I have to respect him.
I mean, have you thought about changing it? If it's being consistent? Like, you have
That's
a towel
a great question.
Hanging over it right now. Like a visibly used towel. You could just honestly throw that on the floor. And I wouldn't be able to bring this up. And it feels like I'm making fun of it, but I'm honestly just saying a thing that I'm seeing. I'm not offering any like twist or burn. That's a dirty towel.
So I'm not going to try and factor any of that into my review. But
okay. Sorry. Sorry to jump on it.
That's so funny.
Also, straighten the picture, Tommy.
Hey. Somebody else pointed this out, that it actually, if you couldn't see the frame, it would actually look like it's straight because Rodney is crooked in the picture. So it's almost like it's normal.
You, It would, you have to stand up right next to it anyway when you're done with this, and it would take you literally the flick of a
finger. No, he'd have to hire a guy off of Fiverr or whatever to come.
You could honestly, at the same time, use your right hand to remove that towel while using your left hand to straighten out the picture frame, and the visual image you've chosen to set up for work stuff would be significantly less sad. And I like you a lot, man. You know that. I'm not somebody out here trying to be mean to Tommy. You know that I'm very fond of you. You could honestly, in 10 seconds, fix every problem that everyone is making fun of you over and over again for. Zero effort. You're sitting right there. You couldn't, you don't even, hold on. Do me a favor. Do me a favor.
Okay.
Can you reach that picture frame from where you are? Because I can tell you can probably reach the towel.
Uh-oh, this is for the people at home, this has turned to chaos. It's gotten much worse.
You were able to try to fix it from right there.
Okay, so I'll see if I can pencil it into my schedule later. It's busy over here at McNamara HQ. It's a big month. But what's so funny is, so when Jawbreaker, I never listened to Jawbreaker. The only Jawbreaker song I heard when I was young was not a Jawbreaker. It was a cover of Jawbreaker by Fall Out Boy when I had a big Fall Out Boy phase when I was like in eighth grade or high school or whatever. And Fall Out Boy covered Save Your Generation. Mm-hmm. And I hated it. And I didn't like that version of that song. So for some reason, I thought Jawbreaker was bad because of a cover I'd heard of them, which is like I was 14 or whatever. And I never listened to them at all. I never gave them a shot. And then in 2017, when they had that reunion, all these people I love and respect and whose music taste I have a lot of, you know, commonality with, were so excited about the Jawbreaker reunion, and I just felt like I was like jealous of their nostalgia. I was like, I wish I was looking back fondly on this, but I wish I was excited about this. But I still never really got into it because I just felt like, I don't know, I didn't have an entry point. And that's why I loved so much this playlist you sent, because I'd never just had like a short manageable, oh, here's six songs by Jawbreaker, and I just shoveled them for like 2 hours in a row. I just kept playing them on repeat, and I loved them. I thought they were so good. And then I also watched that documentary, and it reminded me a lot of, I read The Replacements book last year, Trouble Boys, and I think there's a lot of similarities there with like all these like almost making it, shooting themselves in the foot kind of thing. So I like,
except
fell in love
Jawbreaker's
with
good people, and that book makes you hate.
Yeah,
a couple of things. It makes you really hate how they behaved towards themselves and each other.
Yes, very good point. But
and their own fans, and yeah.
Anyways. Yes, yeah. But it really made me love them. Just this like day of listening to this playlist and watching that documentary. So I'm just gonna go ahead and give it the whole thing. I'm gonna give it a 6 out of 6. I really enjoyed listening to this.
Hell yeah! All right, I'll make mine quick because it's almost time to play McNamara HQ, and I'm trying to win a lot of money on my phone. I love this playlist, and I'm happy because this is a band that I wanted to do a deeper dive on in the first place. The only songs I knew really before this, I listened to Boxcar because it was on the top five of their Spotify, and every once in a while I'm reminded of Jawbreaker and I go, oh, I'll check them out, and then I go to the top five of their Spotify playlist, and I knew what's the one that I was just talking about? I knew the drinking one. God damn it. It's where the hell did I do with this
Kiss
thing?
The bottle.
Kiss the Bottle. Shane Torres has played that one for me before. And the song from Dear You, was on NCAA football 06.
Really?
So I was like, I heard it and I was like, where do I know that from? And it's from that football game.
Wow.
Because I used to play that all the time. I know. Very random pick. But I remember being like, what is this song? And yeah. I loved it, and I'm really happy I got to get a chance to do a deep dive. Like I said, that documentary, I can't recommend it enough. Don't Break Down. It's on Amazon Prime. I'm going to go 6, too. I really liked it. I'm going to give it a full points. Chris, you get to rate it, too.
I'm going to give it a 1. I dropped the ball. No, I like all I clearly love all those songs. Is there any way, and I apologize, there's a story I just remembered that people might, I've never
Please.
Told it, but if yes. people are nerding out about Jawbreaker. So when I had my public access show, we were getting all these killer bands. If you look up the roster, especially if you're a punk fan, like it superseded what we should have been able to get. And there was a band called Jawbreaker Reunion, which I always thought was
yes.
a really
I just
funny
found them.
Name.
I
yeah.
like that band. Yeah.
Yeah. They're a good solid punk band from the tri-state area. And I always thought that was a funny name. Try to get people to come out to your show, like Jawbreaker Reunion on the flyer, like good, funny thing. And I had become friends with Adam at this point. And I reached out to him. I go, dude, I want you to know that I know how annoying this is. I was like, I understand that this is an extraordinarily annoying thing. So please forgive me, but I would never forgive myself if I didn't ask. I'm like, everybody is always clamoring for Jawbreaker to reunite. It was them and the Smiths. Those were the two bands that were never going to reunite. I go, now that I have your number and we've hit it off, I was like, I have this show, we have bands. How can I not ask you if there's any way? Can you just, on our public access show, like I can give you no money, but maybe that'll be better somehow. And I was going to say that we had booked Jawbreaker Reunion and make everybody think it was that punk band. And then it was going to be an actual Jawbreaker Reunion. And he goes, oh, dude, can I tell you a secret? We've actually been rehearsing again. He goes, you're in New York, right? Your show's in New York. I go, yeah. He goes, oh, we're all going to be in New York soon together, rehearsing out there. What night is your show? I go, Wednesday night. He goes, ah, shit. Me and Chris don't land till Thursday.
Oh, my God.
Kidding. Can you imagine if unannounced?
Oh, that is wow. So crazy. Damn. That's that almost close. You're almost like dialing the network. Like, is there any way we can just totally change nights?
Yeah. I reached out. I didn't know Jawbreaker Reunion. I met one of the people who used to be in that band. And I was like, listen to this. And they were like, oh, we would have loved to have been a part of that.
That's crazy.
Epic fake out.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. What a story to end the show on. And Chris, this was so much fun, man. Thanks so much for doing it.
Please, thanks for having me. Sorry I ramble so much, but I just get really excited about the things I love.
That's what this whole damn show is about. And you know, calling Tommy a pest or a pedophile or whatever.
pestophile.
I almost said sex.
Oh, man, the things he does to pestophile star are just disgusting.
He is a pestophile.
He's a pestophile. You should bring that. You ran a cooking show called Tommy the Pestophile. And this is how much you love pesto.
Emo Dad and Pestophile. How is the industry not paying attention to this show?
The new Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Hey, look, Pestophile. So crazy. It might just work. And then you quit your job.
Oh, beautiful. All right. Thanks so much, Chris. And guys, get on the Patreon if you're not already on there. Is there anything you want to promote here, Chris?
Actually, you know, I do this online sort of venue, Planet Scum. Tommy's done some stuff on it. Mm-hmm. And I just actually launched a new podcast called New Jersey is the World. And it's just about my massive amount of love for my home state. And we have a Patreon too. And you don't have to be familiar with Jersey. It's me and these two guys I grew up with who are not comedians, but who are just, everybody has those friends from their hometown who are the funniest people they know. And it's just me and those guys talking Jersey. And you might like it if you check it out.
Hell yeah, definitely check that out. Tommy, anything you want to plug here?
No, yeah, just check out the Patreon, and I'm going to be working on my towel game, and that's kind of my focus, so we'll see what happens there.
I love that it's not even straight, the towel. It's like not
no, and it's not even hung like, one side is so much longer than the other.
How is that possible?
Everything about it's asymmetrical. Is it, move your head a second, Tommy. It's touching some of your clothes. It's not. And it's not complicated. I'm not, you guys, is my reputation in comedy, I would say, is like the opposite of mean.
Yes.
And I can't help myself right now. This is wild.
Oh man. All right. Get on the Patreon, people. If you join the $100 tier, you can be a guest on the show and you can talk about Tommy's room also, I guess.
And I heard that you just updated the $100 tier that you get your official I'm a pestophile.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, those are we started making those shirts. We started making the shirts before we even started recording today. Written in my
notes. You're a pestophile, dude.
Registered
pestophile.
All right, we will see you guys next week. Keep it crispy. Bye.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.